When I lived and worked in Birmingham, I helped run a youth group on a local council estate. There was one boy there who often became angry with the other boys and girls there. And one time I remember I took him outside to talk to him, tell him off, say what he was doing wasn't good. And I remember he told me, I can't help it. I've got anger management issues. And it was true. On his parental consent form, it was written anger management issues. And I'd read that. I'd seen that. I haven't asked any teachers here today whether they encounter this at schools, but I imagine that it's increasingly common amongst young people, probably especially boys, anger management issues. You occasionally see it on TV. Maybe prisoners go to anger management classes to deal with anger. You can go on the NHS website for advice on controlling, managing anger management issues. If you Google anger management, most of the websites will tell you that anger isn't a bad thing. It's only a bad thing if it leads to hurting someone else or hurting yourself. It's something to be managed, to be controlled. And most of us do learn to control it. We learn by a certain age that it's not good in our society to show anger. People don't tend to like us if we get angry. So we learn to control it and keep it a bit hidden. Or we learn that life is just a bit more pleasurable, enjoyable if we don't show our anger. So we learn to control it, keep it inside. But maybe as we get a bit older, we get maybe a bit more tired of controlling it and managing it. So what's inside comes out again, like it used to when we were quite small. Or we just can't be bothered to try and please people anymore, so it comes out a bit more when we get a bit older, maybe. That happens sometimes. That seems to be society's view of anger, something to be controlled and managed. So let me ask you, do you get angry? Is it something that you struggle with? It's probably something that most men struggle with, isn't it? And probably quite a few women as well. I definitely struggle with anger. I've learned to control or to manage it and keep it hidden so that people don't think I'm angry. But it's there inside. I have angry, malicious, bitter thoughts. My computer is too slow. I get angry. The car in front is too slow. I get angry. The people around me don't do things the way I want them to do them. I get angry. What does all this have to do with the sixth commandment? Well, we'll see that in a few moments' time. For now, let's turn back to the passage that was read on page 78, Exodus 20. We've been going through these 10 commandments, as Simon was saying, and we learned that the rules come after the rescue. God didn't rescue them because they obeyed any rules. They weren't obeying any rules. They weren't even worshiping God. They were worshiping other gods, Egyptian gods. But God rescues them and then shows them how to live to please him. And today we're looking at the sixth commandment, you shall not murder. And we'll see four things. Don't murder. Don't be careless. Don't get angry. Do love. So first, don't murder. There are several words in the Hebrew language for killing. The one that's used here, which we've translated as murder, refers to illegal killing of someone. So, it's used, for instance, in Numbers 35, verse 16. I think it'll be up on the screen. And here's what God says there. If anyone strikes someone a fatal blow with an iron object, that person is a murderer. The murderer is to be put to death. The avenger of blood shall put the murderer to death. When the avenger comes upon the murderer, the avenger shall put the murderer to death. If anyone with malice aforethought shoves another or throws something at them intentionally so that they die, or if out of enmity one person hits another with their fist so the other dies, that person is to be put to death. That person is a murderer. So the sixth commandment pretty obviously means don't murder. But it also refers to accidental or unintentional killing. Manslaughter, we could say. So Numbers 35 continues. But if without enmity, someone suddenly pushes another or throws something at them unintentionally, or without seeing them drops something heavy, a stone, something at them, or drops on them a stone heavy enough to kill them and they die, then since that other person was not an enemy and no harm was intended, the assembly must judge between the accused and the avenger of blood according to these regulations. So this commandment tells people not to murder, but it also tells them to be careful that they don't kill someone accidentally. Don't be careless. Now, I suppose this applies to anyone whose work might involve bringing any potential harm against someone. Doctors, nurses is an obvious example. Someone who works with heavy machinery. Bus drivers. Engineers or architects who design buildings that need to stay up or people will die. Maybe you can think of other professions. Maybe your profession that I haven't thought about. Care workers. Looking after someone who's maybe suicidal. Or any of us who drive cars. Driving a car is like using a weapon of mass destruction. Are we driving so that if someone is stupid enough to run out in front of us, we are not going to kill them unintentionally? Drink driving? Maybe this means we shouldn't drink at all, even one glass before driving. That's something for you, us to discuss afterwards, maybe. Young men, how do you drive? If it's carelessly, you're breaking the sixth commandment. But this word does not refer to killing in war. It doesn't say anything about whether or not it's okay to kill in battle. You need to go to different parts of the Bible to answer that question. And we're not going to do that now, but I'll say just briefly, the Bible assumes that a soldier fighting in an army belonging to a state against an aggressor, it is okay to kill in those circumstances. So in a just war, soldiers can kill soldiers. Come and ask me afterwards if you want to discuss that more. The word used here is also different to the word used for execute. So this is not saying that capital punishment is wrong. That's pretty obvious given the passage I just read, where the punishment for murder is capital punishment. Or at least letting the avenger of blood kill the murderer. Come and ask me afterwards if you want to discuss that more. To us, it seems pretty obvious that murder is wrong, doesn't it? We've been brought up to know that. But what reason does God give for this command? Well, nothing right here, but we know from other parts of the Bible the reasons that God gives. So how about Genesis chapter 9? After the flood, God speaks to Noah and says, "And from each human being, I will demand an accounting for the life of another human being. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind. Whoever sheds human blood, by humans shall their blood be shed. For in the image of God has God made mankind." Every single human being is made in the image of God, represents God to creation. They're an image bearer. And so killing any human being is killing someone who's made by God and represents God to creation. And God is going to call us to account for that. Imagine a statue of the Queen. You knock the statue over. You're not just knocking a piece of rock over. You are spoiling an image of the Queen, and the Queen can rightly punish you for spoiling her image. The same with us. God made us, we bear his image. If you kill a human being, he will demand an account. We're New Testament Christians. We live after the time of Jesus, and we need to see how Jesus fulfills this command. We read the passage earlier, didn't we? From Matthew's Gospel. It's a good question to ask whenever we read any passage from the Old Testament, whether it's a bit in the history sections, the stories, the narratives, the prophecy, the wisdom literature. How does Jesus fulfill this bit of the Old Testament? We can't just read it like an Old Testament believer. Jesus changes things. And we saw how from Matthew 5 that Jesus changes things. Jesus doesn't throw out the Old Testament law, but he does radically change the way we look at it. Let's look at that again. Matthew 5, 21. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. Anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, is answerable to the court. Anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. The Old Testament law said, do not murder. Jesus said, do not even be angry at your brother or sister. He makes it a matter of the heart. Now, actually, it was always a matter of the heart in the Old Testament as well. Leviticus 19, verse 16. God said, do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life. I am the Lord. Do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly, so you will not share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So it was always a matter of the heart, even in the Old Testament. But Jesus highlights that. And to the Jewish religious leaders who were making these Old Testament laws something easy to obey, he challenges them. The law is more than just do not murder. It's do not even be angry with your neighbor. Can you do that? Murder starts with anger in the heart. So far we've looked at things that we shouldn't do. Don't murder. Don't be careless. Don't get angry. Let's think about what we should do. Paul puts it very clearly in Colossians 3. You can turn to that if you want. It'll be up on the screen as well. Colossians 3, verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever belongs to your earthly nature, sexual immorality, impurity, lust, evil desires, and greed, which is idolatry. Because of these, the wrath of God is coming. You used to walk in these ways in the life you once lived, but now you must rid yourselves of all such things as these. Anger, rage, malice, slander, and filthy language from your lips. Do not lie to each other, since you have taken off your old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge in the image of its creator. Verse 12. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. Paul says that Christians, those who have trusted, they've repented in Jesus and trusted in him for salvation, they are new people. And they should act like new people. They're to put off their old nature, their old selves with its old practices, anger, rage, slander, malice, all those things, and put on their new selves, their new clothes, the things that fit with the new self. Compassion and kindness and love. Jesus said the greatest two commandments, Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. If we love our neighbor, then we won't be angry with them. We won't hide bitter thoughts inside ourselves against them. This is not just a New Testament command. We saw it earlier in Leviticus 19. Love your neighbor as yourself. What Jesus does is to challenge who we think our neighbor is. Not just the people who we like and who like us, who it's easy to love because they love us. But as he's put in the parable of the Good Samaritan, your neighbor is the person who you come into contact with, who you walk past in the street, whoever it is who is close to you, even if they are your enemy. Love your enemy as you love yourself, Jesus said. And then the apostle Paul wrote, Romans 12 verse 14, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Verse 17, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. Jesus shows us the ultimate example of this. He could have stayed in heaven and judged us guilty sinners. Guilty because we have broken the sixth commandment in many different ways. But instead, he loved us. And he left heaven and came down on earth, became a human being, and humbled himself to die on a cross. That's how much he loved us. And because of him loving us, we love others. And as we love them, we won't get angry at them. We won't take revenge. We won't keep revenge in our hearts in the form of bitterness. Instead, we'll forgive. And we'll choose to forget. However hard that might be. Do you feel anger in your heart towards someone? Someone who's wronged you? Who rightly deserves some kind of punishment? Are there people who've wronged you that you haven't forgiven? Are there people that you won't talk to, even in this room, because of something that they've done to you or said to you? Do you lack joy because you're constantly frustrated and annoyed at someone, at many people, at the world? And you live with bitterness that boils and rages underneath. What are you going to do about it? Here's one thing that you could do. You could say, I'm going to try and stop being angry. That's what the world does. That's what other religions do. Let's try and stop being angry. Or let's try and manage and control our anger. Or hide it. That's what you could do. Or you could do what Christians do, which is different from what the world does and from what every other religion does. You accept that anger is not just an issue to be managed and controlled, that it's a sin that deserves God's punishment. You accept the sin and the punishment that we deserve, that anger really is a sin. Sins aren't just those bigger things that we stopped doing when we grew up. Accept that it's a sin. Men, are you harsh and overbearing with your wives? Teenagers, are you angry with parents for embarrassing you, annoying you, telling you to do things that you don't want to do? Car drivers, are you angry with everyone else out there who can't drive as well as you? Workers, do you rage inside yourselves because you didn't get the promotion that you wanted? Because someone else got the credit that you deserved? Because the government keeps changing the rules and your work just keeps getting more and more? Are you bitter towards leaders in the church because they don't let you do the things that you want to do? Recognize the hard work that you've been doing. Accept the sin of anger. Think, what are the reasons why you get angry? It's one thing to accept that anger is a sin, but what's the reason behind that anger in your heart? What's the root cause of it? I spent a long time thinking about why I get angry. Sometimes I get angry at other people because I think the way that I do things is better than the way that they do things. That's pride. Thinking that I'm better than them. Sometimes I get angry maybe in the car because I'm late for an appointment and I know that I'm going to upset someone. I want to please them. I want them to think well of me. That's pride. If I'm late, I accept the fact that I have left late. It's my fault. I accept the fact that they might not think that I'm perfect. That's pride. What's the sin beneath the sin? Think why you get angry. Third, confess to God and receive forgiveness. Confess your anger. Confess what's behind the anger. The pride, the lack of love towards others, unbelief in God's promises towards you, unbelief in the fact that God's in control. And what's happened right now is good for you. The sin beneath the sin. Confess that to God and receive complete forgiveness. The psalmist wrote, Psalm 32, "Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin." With real confession comes real forgiveness. Because Jesus died for our sin. Jesus died for our anger. Jesus died for our pride, our lack of love, our unbelief in his sovereignty, his promises. We receive complete forgiveness. Trust in Jesus and his perfect record. He is the only person who lived the perfect life. Who never broke the sixth commandment. He never killed, was never careless, was never angry in a sinful way. And always perfectly loved. It's not surprising when we think that Jesus is fully God. And these commandments reflect who God is. These commandments show us what kind of God he is. He's a God who perfectly loves. Who is holy, holy, holy. The God who came down and showed us and lived that life, demonstrating who he is. We trust in Jesus and his perfect record, the perfect record that comes to us when we trust in Jesus. And we put off our anger and our rage and our malice and our slander and our bitterness. And we put on love and compassion and gentleness. And we will fail again, and the process starts again. We acknowledge our sin, we confess it, we trust in Jesus' perfect record, and we put off our anger and we put on love again. That's what the Christian does. But maybe you're here and you're not a Christian. Well, you can't put off anger. You can manage it, You can go to the NHS website and look up some anger management guidelines. But that's all you can do. Because you haven't got God working inside you, changing you. You haven't got Jesus who's paid the price for your anger. And so if that's you, then look at Jesus, the only person who can help you. And talk to me afterwards. Now, I want to return to the first point I made, don't murder, which I skimmed over quite quickly. But we can't skim over it that quickly, can we? On the surface, it seems quite easy to obey. But in our society, there is one group of people, human beings made in the image of God, who are being systematically killed. Legally. Paid for with taxpayers' money. Now, you know what I'm talking about? Unborn children. In 2014, 184,571 unborn babies were killed, according to the Department of Health statistics. Probably more, because those were just the ones that the doctors reported after they had carried out the abortion. You can have an abortion of a baby up to 24 weeks old if you can find two doctors to sign to say that continuing with the pregnancy would harm the mental or physical, would bring mental or physical harm to the mum or the baby. Or if your baby would be born with a serious handicap. It's not that difficult to get an abortion. Now, I'm aware that in a church this size, there will almost definitely be a few people who have been personally affected by this. So I want to be sensitive. I want to go back to what we've just been looking at. Forgiveness. Real forgiveness for real confession. And so if you are here and you are living with something that you need to confess, or that you have confessed in the past, then there is true forgiveness because of what Jesus did on the cross. Anyone who breaks the sixth commandment in whatever way will find forgiveness and will be given Jesus' perfect record and can stand before God shameless, without shame, unashamed. And we need to be a church where you can feel able to open up in the right context, not to everyone, but to someone who can pray with you and point you to Jesus. So if you need to do that, then do that. Find someone you trust who can pray with you. We need to be a church full of compassion for one another, recognizing that we are all sinners. We're not people who put off our sin when we became Christians and now are living blameless lives and make the odd mistake here and there but try and pretend that we're okay. We're all sinners who come here on a Sunday morning and a Sunday evening having broken God's commandments every single day of the week, coming needing forgiveness, needing to confess, and needing encouragement and support from one another. Sinners encouraging sinners, praying with one another, not judging one another, acknowledging our sin, confessing, praying. But we must also be a church which speaks the truth and speaks up for a group that cannot speak for themselves, a group with no voice. So will we be that voice? Will we write to our MPs to protest that abortion is so easy? Will we support those Christians who do campaign for these issues? Will we pray for a movement against abortion in our country? Don't murder or abort or terminate. Don't be careless, even careless with pregnancy. Don't get angry. Put off all these things and put on love.